Christian unity is an urgent mission for the Catholic and Orthodox churches. That was Pope Benedict's message Thursday from Turkey, a nation which itself bridges the East and West. On his third and next to last day of his pastoral visit there, Pope Benedict participated at the Orthodox celebration of the Divine Liturgy, presided by Patriarch Bartholomew I at the Patriarchal Church of St. George in Istanbul for the Feast of St. Andrew. While Philippa Hitchin is in Istanbul with Pope Benedict, I talked with her shortly after the liturgy ended.
Benedicat vos omnipotens Deus, Pater et Filius et Spiritus Sanctus.
Και η αγάπη του Θεού και Πατρός και η κοινωνία του Αγίου Πνεύματος ή με τα πάντων ημών.
So, Philippa, watching the celebration on television, it seemed very impressive. Afterwards, when the Pope and Patriarch Bartholomew appeared on the balcony, they shook hands, they looked so pleased, they even raised their hands, almost in a sign of victory. It seemed to me a very symbolic gesture for what was a very symbolic liturgy.
Yes, that's right, Tracy. Really, Thursday's events here in Istanbul mark the main focus of Pope Benedict's pastoral journey to Turkey, and that is to strengthen and improve these relations between the Catholic and the Orthodox churches. And so in the morning, the Pope returned to that Patriarchal Church of St. George, where he'd been welcomed by Patriarch Bartholomew I the previous evening, and he took part in the lengthy but beautiful Divine Liturgy marking the feast day of St. Andrew, of course, patron saint of the Orthodox world.
Well, in fact, Philippa, November 30th marks the feast of St. Andrew, as you were saying. He, of course, is the apostle revered by the Orthodox, just as we Catholics revere St. Peter. But just who was St. Andrew? Just listen and we'll find out.
St. Andrew the Apostle was born in Bethsaida of Galilee. He was the brother of Simon, called Peter, the first bishop of Rome. Andrew at once recognized Jesus as the Messiah, and it was Andrew who introduced Jesus to his brother Peter. Early Christian writers say that Andrew preached in Byzantium, where he appointed St. Stachys as its first bishop. Andrew is therefore venerated as the founder of the church at the city that became Constantinople and later Istanbul. Andrew received martyrdom by crucifixion on the order of the Roman governor Aegeus. The place of Andrew's crucifixion was at Patrae in Achaia, during the reign of Nero, on the 30th of November in the year 60. Andrew was bound, not nailed to the cross, in order to prolong his sufferings. A centuries-old tradition has it that the cross of Andrew's crucifixion had the form of an X, and the X-shaped cross is now widely known as the St. Andrew's Cross. Both the Latin and the Greek churches keep the 30th of November as his feast.
Now, Philippa, back to you. I know that over recent decades, since the Second Vatican Council, it's become traditional for Catholic and Orthodox delegations to make exchange visits to Rome and Istanbul.
That's absolutely right. They make these exchange visits to celebrate each other's feast days. And in fact, if you remember, Pope John Paul II came here to Istanbul on November the 30th, 1979, right at the beginning of his pontificate.
In the same spirit, my presence here today is meant to renew our commitment to advancing along the road towards the re-establishment by God's grace of full communion between the Church of Rome and the Church of Constantinople. I can assure you that the Catholic Church is willing to do everything possible to overcome obstacles and to seek, together with our Orthodox brothers and sisters, even more effective means of pastoral cooperation to this end.
In fact, in his words at the liturgy in St. George's on Thursday, Pope Benedict gave thanks for these many really positive developments that have taken place since Pope Paul VI and Patriarch Athenagoras took the vital step back in December 1965 of lifting the mutual anathemas or excommunications that were proclaimed in 1054 when the church divided into East and Western Christianity.
In fact, Philippa, I'd like to take a look now at exactly what divided the two churches back in the 1050s. Of the several issues the two churches could not agree on, one stood out from the rest. Let's listen.
An especially thorny issue was the proper understanding of the Holy Spirit's relation to the Father and the Son within the mysterious life of the Most Holy Trinity. After centuries of struggle with the question, Ecumenical Patriarch Michael Carularius openly and definitively declared that the Holy Spirit proceeds from the Father. The Patriarch's declaration was understood to be at odds with the traditional Western understanding of the Holy Trinity, according to which the Holy Spirit proceeds from the Father and the Son. The filioque controversy, so-called because filioque is one way to say "and the Son" in Latin, led the Pope to declare excommunicate and anathema all those professing the belief formerly espoused by the Patriarch. The Patriarch also declared excommunicate and anathema all those professing filioque. The year was 1054. After more than 9 centuries of separation, in December 1964, Pope Paul VI and the Ecumenical Patriarch Athenagoras met in Jerusalem, bringing new vitality to the relationship between the churches that had been sadly divided for so long. On December 7, 1965, the Pope and the Patriarch lifted the mutual excommunications.
So, Philippa, what else did Pope Benedict have to say with regard to Christian unity at Thursday's liturgy?
Pope Benedict said, just as Jesus calls the two brothers, Andrew and Peter, to be fishers of men, so the successors of these apostles, the Pope and the Patriarch today, are called to the same and ever more urgent task of spreading the gospel and promoting its traditions and values.
This charge left us by the holy brothers Peter and Andrew is far from finished. On the contrary, today it is more urgent and necessary, for it looks not only to those cultures which have been touched only marginally by the gospel message, but also to long-established European cultures deeply grounded in the Christian tradition.
He noted that the divisions which persist among Christians today are in fact a scandal and an obstacle to the proclamation of that gospel.
The divisions which exist among Christians are a scandal to the word and an obstacle to the proclamation of the gospel. It is only through brotherly communion between Christians and through their mutual love that the message of God's love for each and every man and woman will become credible. Anyone who casts a realistic glance on the Christian world today will see the urgency of this witness. May our daily prayer and activity be inspired by a fervent desire not only to be present at the Divine Liturgy, but to be able to celebrate it together, to take part in the one table of the Lord, sharing the same bread and the same chalice. May our encounter today serve as an impetus and joyful anticipation of the gift of full communion.
And very importantly, he renewed the invitation issued by his predecessor, Pope John Paul II, to promote a sincere dialogue to discover new ways in which the Petrine ministry, this is another obstacle which divides the two churches, the Petrine ministry can be exercised in a sincere service of love which is recognized by all concerned.
Now, Philippa, I know the two church leaders signed a joint declaration at the end of Thursday's liturgy. What was contained in that document?
Well, this document really contains much of the same desire to push ahead in this ecumenical dialogue between Orthodox and Catholics. The statement was signed by the Pope and the Patriarch after the liturgy in the adjoining residence of Patriarch Bartholomew.
Déclaration commune entre le pape Benoît XVI et le patriarche Bartholomeus I.
The statement read aloud in French, first of all, by the head of the Vatican's Council for Christian Unity, Cardinal Walter Kasper, stressed especially the vital work of the Mixed Commission on Theological Dialogue, which met recently in Belgrade. This is a commission of Orthodox and Catholic theologians, which is seeking to resolve some of these main obstacles we've been talking about that are still dividing the two churches. For the third time in 3 days here in Istanbul, the statement also raised the plight of people in the Middle East, calling for peace in the land where Jesus lived, and especially calling for a really more authentic dialogue between people of different faiths in order to fight against violence and discrimination. And above all, the statement reiterated the shared belief that killing innocent people in the name of religion is an offense to God, it said, and an offense to human dignity. The statement also said that both Catholic and Orthodox leaders view in a positive way the developments regarding the formation of the European Union, stressing that all efforts must be made to protect religious freedom, to safeguard the rights and traditional practices of ethnic and religious minorities. And it said Europe, while remaining open to other religions, really must preserve its profoundly Christian roots, traditions, and values.
In the face of this reality, we are called, together with all other Christian communities, to renew Europe's awareness of its Christian roots, traditions, and values, giving them new vitality. Our efforts to build closer ties between the Catholic Church and the Orthodox churches are part of this missionary task.
And my thanks to Philippa Hitchin for reporting there from Istanbul.